and so long ago. Nico had never seen it. He'd hoped the ride would help his partner focus, put events at the Mage Guild in perspective. It hadn't. The outcropping bore no marker, no sign that a Barsus had been dispatched from there to heaven. Now that they were back on the hill above the barracks, the Storm God's lightning was tearing up the sky. His Tros stallion pawed the ground, impatient, standing so long in the rain. He stroked its neck.
"Things aren't as simple as you insist, Nico. Killing one wizard boy isn't the answer to all our problems. Gods are moving, forces shifting. You don't understand the threat."
"I do, Commander," said Nico,
rain running down his face like tears, dripping from his hair in the torrent.
"It's better to face Sham in the Mage Guild than in my rest place or his. I know what to do. Give me leave to do it. Now."
Lightning snapped above.
"Not if you won't make peace with that goddess and take any help she offers you."
Combating Sham in some mystical Bandaran battle space, Nico was nearly lost to them once. How do you tell your best fighter he's not ready, when such a man must believe he can win against all odds on any day?
"I can't afford to lose you."
Thunder pealed.
"First you tell me to stay away from her."
Nico had to raise his voice to be heard over the storm.
"Now you want me to give her my soul. I don't believe I need more help than you and the sacred band provide. Or that the band needs her. How will Enlil take it with the goddess vying with him for adherence?"
"You needed her help to heal. When you were hurt, she was all you wanted. For the healing, I'm grateful, and you should be. As for Enlil, are you asking for your own sake, or for the stepson's? Enlil will do as he pleases."
Wind caught the rain and whipped them with it, whistling.
"She's upsetting things."
Exasperated, humiliated.
"Thebans kissing her pennant, making penance of their own. Crits offended. Others are."
Thunder rolled again.
"Those Thebans are hers, her adherents."
Strange to be taking the goddess's part, but truth was truth.
"She's here because of them, not because of you. She has an altar here. She has rights here now. She lost 254 fighters on the Chironian battle plain. Then she lost two more here. How would you feel?"
"I can't answer that. Perhaps you know the minds of gods. I don't. But I know what we need. It's me, doing what I said I'd do. We need this to stop. I'll stop Shamshi. He's a symbol of all that's wrong. And if Ascalon is really here, in this with his mists and all his tricks, it's not going to stop until I stop it. I can talk to him. He'll meet with me."
He raked strands of sopping hair back from his face. "Not we, but I."
"It's past time for talk, Nico."
His right man seldom told him to his face that he was wrong. At least stealth was stronger now. His fighter sat his horse without thought, without favoring his right side, without leaning left, or using his right leg gingerly or weakly.
"We need to do something. I do."
Lightning flashed again. Tempest said,
"I'll make a deal with you. I'll ride down to the barracks. You stay here and talk with the goddess, Nico, if she'll talk with you. Talk with Enlil, if he'll listen. You'll be helping me. I need to keep the gods off all our necks with Ascalon here.
Go carefully. Gods can test here, and Ascalon is beyond the laws that men and gods obey.
Then I'll ride with you into Sanctuary, and we'll try one more time at the Mage Guild. Just the two of us. Agreed?
Nico looked at him through the rain, his eyes flat and empty now, his face composed. Not a good sign with this one.
I'll try, he said.
So Tempest rode down the hill to wait and watch from a distance. Enstrat was waiting for him there, wet and muddy, on foot in the courtyard where men wrestled with crates and carts in the rain. Strat said,
Commander, Ishad came to me in the city. She said Shamshi's joined up with Ascalon. She says when Sham's here, he's in the Mage Guild, and when he's not, he's in some Kyrenian battle space. She says try to catch him here, where he's weaker. She thinks he's too strong in that other place, wherever it is, even for us.
Strat spread his arms and dropped them.
Not my opinion, hers. She says she has his scent.
I'll deal with it. What else? Tempest asked, seeing more left unspoken in Stratton's eyes. Nico had just said nearly the same thing to him. It's better to face Sham in the Mage Guild than in my rest place or his. Treacherous ground today, and not only because of the mud and the storm. Rain slicked Stratton's face.
Riddler, Torchholder wants to throw a feast for Corus on Ilsdi, full moon. And he wants Corus to perform one of Ashenka's copulation rituals, with luminaries in attendance. You'd know which right.
God of sack and pillage. He knew Vashanka's rituals well. One of them had produced Giscarus. He's too young. If Tempest let the boy perform the rite, the god would be fully in Corus forever after. And fully in Sanctuary, if the pillager wasn't already. It had been a long time since Vashanka had spoken to Tempest, who'd cursed Ranki and all its gods who'd left Vashanka's service and taken up with Enlil. They were estranged, the man and his former god. The rain chilled him. Vashanka was a jealous god, and the sacred band of stepsons had once been his to command, and was not now, but for this one youth, Corus.
Perhaps the mating rite is not so bad a thought, he told Strat. If Corus has the god inside him, let's see what happens when we acknowledge the fact formally. At least we'll know. And afterward, if the god is pleased, Vashanka may fight for us once again. We'll do it. Tell Torchholder we'll attend. And tell Corus he may come to me with questions if he has them.
Strat grinned at him through the buffeting storm.
Can I be there for the tutorial?
When Tempest looked around, Nico wasn't on the hilltop any longer. Too much anger, and only one place Nico would have gone. Tempest clapped his legs around his horse and galloped out of there, hoping to intercept his fighter before things went too far. The sentries barely got the gates open in time. But Nico hadn't disobeyed his orders. On foot, head down, he was walking his mount toward the gates through the rain, which was finally letting up.
"So what happened?"
he asked, riding his big trouse in a circle around his stepson and then coming alongside.
"Nothing,"
Nico said, looking up at him, soaked and dripping.
"I stood there in the rain at their altars. Neither Harmony nor Enlil spoke to me. I tried. I'm not like you, not what's needed for talking to gods and goddesses. And I've got to rub down this horse and clean all this tack."
Wet hair, down in his eyes, wet beard, close around his face. Gaze remote and colder than Tempest liked. He'd let this one have his way too much, and now they were at odds over gods. So Tempest got off his horse and walked together with Nico through the gates and back toward the stables as the rain stopped at last.
"You need to cut your hair," he said. "We're going to a feast at the palace at full moon."
Change the subject. Tempest wasn't going to tell Nico what Ishard said right now, or let Nico go to the Mage Guild by himself. He wasn't going to soften. His gut told him that if he did, he could lose his partner. Back in his own quarters, not the Riddler's, Nico cut off all the hair he could reach. It wasn't easy, but his helmet would fit better. His hair wouldn't fall into his eyes. He shaved his beard. He cleaned up after himself. He'd moved back in here 2 days past. He needed to sleep. The Riddler was up all night, every night. Nico needed to meditate. He needed to spend time in his rest place. He needed to decide what to do. His anger, aimed at the gods themselves, was spilling over, even polluting his contact with the band and the Riddler. There is always a correct path. There is always the right solution. There is always balance, equilibrium, and calm. If he could just find it. His body was no longer betraying him. He was as good or better than he'd ever been. When the goddess said the Mage Guild trap was just for him, she'd made it clear that all the harm Sham had done was on his account. Riding with the sacred band through a mist that chilled, but might have killed, had shown Nico how great a threat the wizard boy could be. Shamshi had help. That was clear. From Ascalon. No one else could call down wizard weather. Ascalon wasn't being fair. But then, the Dream Lord never had been. He sat on his bed. Then, stripped down to his loin guard, he sat on the floor cross-legged to see if he could. His right flank didn't scream at him. His body was better than it had any right to be. She had done that for him. Or to him. He sat until he couldn't sit any longer. He couldn't stay in his rest place. He wasn't calm enough. He could reach his blue-green meadow, his clear stream, his blue sky, but two figures moved among the trees at the edge of his copse, intruding there. Lurking, and that made him angry. He could see them in the distance, and whenever he tried to chase them away, the specter of Chironea intervened, opening up under his feet like a chasm. He wasn't going to Sham's battle plane, not again. He couldn't face that battle, that parody of Chironea. Not unarmed. Not from here. Not yet. Not while his mot eluded him. Fury was eating at his composure, eroding his hold on his soul. This intrusion into his rest place was intolerable, a violation of sanctity that kept him from finding equilibrium. Was it the Dream Lord lurking there with Sham? He still had only his shabby duty gear. None of his new equipment had arrived but the crossbow and the short sword. He strung the sword on his old work belt. Tomorrow he'd practice with it, with Strat. Then he remembered he'd missed his practice with Strat today, and that made him even angrier with himself. This had to stop. He got his gear, his work belt, its belt pouch, girt on the sword, and went outside to the stables. He'd go find Crit and work the town tonight. He needed to attack something, dismantle something, find a target and dismember it, piece by piece. Push the rage through him. There is no balance in an angry soul. He led out the black colt and tacked it up. He wasn't taking his mare, who might be in foal for this foray, or one of the good Trosse horses. This was his colt. No one could disapprove of him taking it. He swung up on it while still in the stable and rode it between the doors into the night. A light rain was falling, hardly more than a drizzle, soft and mild. The stable doors could stay open. Sentries saw him coming and pulled back the gates before him, closed them behind. Then it was done. All the way down to sanctuary in the dark he sought his mat, that mystic calm that gave him all the peace he ever knew. He'd hoped the ride would soothe him, the cadence of his horse, the patter of the rain, the sounds of night creatures all around. He would make a gravel pond out at the barracks. Tempest wouldn't mind, and Arden and Chorus could use it too. He could give them lessons, more advanced than they'd yet had. The black colt was rambunctious, hot-blooded, petitioning heaven for mares. As long as the colt kept his head down, Nico didn't punish him. He was a young horse, after all, looking for love wherever he could find it. They forded the white foal just above the fork. It was good for the colt to wade across. So they came into the city, through Triumph Gate. It was fourth watch by then. Few were stirring. The rain had stopped. He ran his palm over his slick saddle, over the colt's sweaty shoulder. Its muscles twitched under his hand. Crickets chirped somewhere close. He wasn't paying much attention to his route. He didn't realize he was near the street of Arcana until he got there. He halted the colt at the intersection. His commander had told him not to do this alone. He knew better than to disobey. But that long, empty street called to him, taunting and sinister. He put his left leg on the colt and it ambled toward the Mage Guild. They'd just walk up there to see if any lights were on. Tempest had said he couldn't go in there, not that he couldn't ride by there. There was no mist tonight, at least not that kind. The air was wet, heavy. Wisps of fog lay about like steam floating above the ground. He rode to where he thought Harmony had cast her standard, that long spear. He couldn't see the hole that the spear point had made in the road, but he knew it must be there. He couldn't let this go on. Not this way, not with Sham picking off his cohort, trying to get to him. He wasn't afraid of that wizard boy. One youth causing so much trouble, he couldn't excuse it. Ari dead, and Dion, and a pair of Thebans. Lysis wounded twice, and Chorus and Artem once. Enough. The youth was big and strong and lethal. This time, Nico would give no quarter. He was looking for something to hack to pieces tonight, and Sham was just the right thing. He closed his legs on the colt. It snorted, but did as he ordered. They jogged straight up to the Mage Guild gates. He had the keys. Tempest trusted him. His commander had let him keep those keys, souvenirs. He would solve this problem of Shamshi, and his commander would be pleased. The threat would go away, the youth would go away, no one else needed to be hurt. He slid off his mount, rump to horse. He drop-tied the colt, telling it, "Stay." Then thought better of it and tied its reins to the Mage Guild's iron fence. He slipped his shield off its saddle thong and onto his left arm from the colt's off side. He got his helmet and settled it on his head. In his belt pouch, the keys clinked. He got out all three and tried them. Tonight, the second one opened the lock on the gates. He pushed the gates open, then slipped inside, putting the keys back in his belt pouch. He drew his new short sword. It felt unaccustomed in his hand. He tried it against the air, slashing back and forth. It would serve its purpose. The colt called plaintively. It didn't want to be tied there all alone. He'd just started up the walk, setting one foot in front of the other, when the Mage Guild's double oak doors banged open. Something came flying out, screeching so loudly his ears rang, launching itself through the air at him. Nothing human could leap so far. He couldn't make sense of the form it had, distorted and misshapen, streaking at him through the dark. But it did have a shape. He tracked the center of that shape with his sword. Whatever it was, if it had bowels, he could disembowel it. If it had a head, he could decapitate it. If it had a heart, he could skewer it. It certainly had a mouth and lungs. It screamed like a banshee. A long, burbling scream coming on. It hit him faster and harder than he thought it would. It hit him and his shield with the force of a falling rock, knocking the wind out of him. He staggered, almost going down. His sword stabbed into something soft, and he pulled his blade up, twisting. He felt a body, some indescribable carcass that might be ribbed, grating on that short sword. Other things that might be arms around him. But there were too many limbs for them all to be arms. Too many arms and legs were grappling him. This thing was screaming and sobbing, and it definitely had teeth. Teeth were sunk in his shield arm. The embrace that held him didn't have bones where bones should be, and the thing that hugged him close didn't smell like a man. It smelled like a dead thing. He'd once embraced his undead partner, Janny, and he knew what long dead things smelled like close at hand. It was slimy. Its fetid breath was puffing against him. Spittle rode each gasp. It caught up his legs with some part of itself and wound around his arms with something else. He hit the ground. Then it began tearing at him, biting at his cuirass, wrenching and pulling in a battle he didn't understand. He was rolling on the ground with it, his short sword and sword hand stuck up inside it. He couldn't get his sword free, couldn't use his shield, he couldn't get its teeth out of his shield arm. And it had another way to cut and rend and tear, although he couldn't see a sword or a knife or even a head or an eye. He couldn't get to his belt knife, couldn't get his sword arm free with this adversary, clutching him like some hellish lover. The only chance he had was his sword, stuck up there, inside its body, while the thing screeched and howled around a mouthful of his arm. He wrapped his legs around whatever was grabbing at him. On his back with the wailing thing on top of him, he tried to push forward with his sword, then pull back with his shield arm, hoping to sever or break something, a spine, a limb, while he dug around with his short sword inside a body that was slippery and screaming. His stomach caught on fire. It hurt, a white-hot pain, coursing across him from side to side. It was hard to breathe. He couldn't get this amorphous, ravaging thing off him. He couldn't get a grip on its arms, if it had them, or neck, if it had one, or head. And then it was gone. No more banshee howling. No more keening. No more growling or munching. Abrupt silence. Not even a final grunt when it disappeared. It just wasn't there. Its weight was no longer on top of him. He was lying there, flat on his back on the Mage Guild walk, alone, with a white-hot pain in his stomach and a chewed shoulder. But he still had his sword, and something wet was all over it, and all over him. He thought he'd get up now, take stock. His sword arm was lying across his chest. He could feel his heart beating through his cuirass. At first he thought he was just too weak with relief that this incomprehensible battle was over. He'd studied for battle all his life, every nuance, every form, every nicety. Fighting something that flickered in and out of being with no particular shape was a test of faith, a test of might, a test of every skill he had, and some he didn't have. It was gone now, whatever it was, or had been. Its suffocating weight wasn't on top of him any more. His chest was heaving. He took greedy breaths, happy to have the privilege and lungs that could still breathe air. But he couldn't get up. He couldn't move. He was lying there in a wet patch in the dark, and he couldn't move at all. He took a deeper breath. He could breathe as deeply as he pleased. He was alive. He could feel his heart pounding in his ears. But he couldn't move his arms or legs. And beyond the white-hot searing pain in his stomach, he couldn't feel anything. He tried to shift his head, but he couldn't do that either. Behind him, the colt gave a plaintive, mournful whinny, and another, and something whinnied back. "Now I'm in for it. It sent a friend to finish the job." But he still couldn't move, not yet. He was too exhausted. As soon as he could roll over, he'd need to deal with whatever this was coming in on horseback. He wished the dawn would break so he could see better. Helmets were tricky that way. You couldn't hear or see the way you'd like. His breathing was very loud in his ears, so he wasn't sure if he heard footsteps or if he didn't. Stones scraped, clacked together, scraped again, and then he was sure someone was coming, or something was.
"If I can just move."
But he couldn't. He still couldn't feel his arms or legs. And yet the pain in his stomach was very clear. The pain was so intense it made him want to retch. But he couldn't do it. He could feel every flap of ripped skin across his stomach, every iota of cut muscle and slashed flesh. That pain washed over him in waves as if it was his pulse, as if whatever hurt in his stomach was his whole being. But he still couldn't move an arm or leg or turn his head.
Bad way to die. Helpless, belly up on the ground, like a beetle waiting for someone to come along and crush it underfoot.
He went seeking his mat, his rest place, and this time it opened to him, welcoming and full of joy. His meadow rolled eternally, star-shaped, evergreen. The grass was thick, butterflies and hummingbirds fluttered there, clouds like mares' tails floated across a clear blue sky. Here he could move. He walked over to his stream and saw a current of blood in the middle of clear water, with a blue tinge of sorcery winding it round. His faith and fate, the will of gods. There were pebbles in his stream bed, worn smooth with the passing of time. If he could just retreat, just hide his soul here, then he was safe. He could sit down here, gain strength here, watch the blood and the colors in his stream. A Barsis would come and sit with him, and everything would be as it was meant to be. Then something hit him, hit his body on the Mage Guild walk. It pounded on his chest. He could feel it strike him. Once, twice, three times, again, and again. So he had to go back there. He had a body to protect, and now it hurt like very hell. After the sunlight in his rest place, the dark of the night was impenetrable. Through the eye holes in his helmet in that dark, he couldn't see who was bending over him. Still, he knew someone was there. He wanted to say something, but he couldn't. If it was Sham, his enemy, he wanted to acknowledge an end to fighting, salute the victor, make a proper finish to what was so poorly begun. If it was the Riddler, he wanted to explain. He wanted to say how much he'd loved their life together, how much he loved the stepsons, how much Tempest and all he had taught had meant to him. He was the richer for it all. But he couldn't talk. He couldn't move. He felt his neck snap back when the helmet was pulled off his head. He felt the moist summer air kiss his face. He tried to make out the figure above him, but there was too much darkness tinged with red. A jolt tore through him. He knew he was being dragged. The pain in his stomach spiked hotter, curling around his spine and ribs, his kidneys and his heart. The pain constricted his gut, muscles cramped, breathing was harder. His stomach was blazing. Anguish pulsed in waves, breaking across him in sparks that caught fire wherever they met his muscles, spasming his flesh. He could barely breathe for the agony of it. Then his head fell back on something softer than stone. Someone was bending down over him. He could see a vaguely human form, just an outline in the lifting dark. Hair fell in his eyes and then away. He heard a voice say, "Nico, let me help you one more time. Please, or you'll miss all your beautiful battles yet to come." And lips sought his own, kissing him, caressing him, blowing breath into him. "Please say yes. Say yes. And then lie still. Don't fight. For just another moment. Just lie still, and then you can get up."
He couldn't move. He couldn't fight. He wanted to, so much. He had nothing left to fight with. Lying still was all he could do. He could smell her, that summer breeze of her. But he couldn't say anything. He tried. His body wouldn't obey him. He thought, "Oh, please, please, yes." And she kissed him again, with his head in her lap, on her armor. There was a moment where and when he hung suspended. Far below were her thighs. His head rested there, and life. And all around there was red anguish and dark numbness, worse than pain. Pain held in abeyance, with no body to hurt, or take a breath, or know it hurt, or be in any way alive. Then feeling returned, and with it came a deeper, more excruciating agony, a more abiding pain, and he groaned despite himself. "Please," he said out loud, "please help me if you can. Don't leave me paralyzed here for it to find." "Oh, I can," said Harmony's soft, sweet voice. And the goddess kissed him once more, and blew her breath of life into his mouth, and every inch of him caught fire. Her breath burned hotter than the white-hot pain in his stomach. It burned hotter than the sun. It tingled colder than the space between the stars or the place where his heart should beat like a drum. Tapped, rat-a-tapped. He remembered how a heart could beat, what it should feel like, what it should sound like. Tat, rat-a-tat. Tat, rat, rat-a-tat-a-tat. He remembered lifting his dancing girl on the beach, in the sand with the music pounding so fast in his head, and her silken hair swirling around them. That fire consumes him and remakes him. Tat, rat-a-tat. Tat, rat-tat-a-tat-a-tat. Lightning courses through him, igniting every sinew, every nerve, and searing deep into his flesh. When that fire passes, his stomach doesn't hurt. His legs and arms obey him.
"Thank you,"
he manages, ashamed and relieved, and free of pain, but still content to lie there, breathing the meadow of her, trying to find her eyes as dawn begins. Is she real, or has she come to his rest place to find him? A Barsis had come there once, when death was near. She still cradles his head in her lap, and behind her dawn's first colors preen, surrounding her with all the fire of nature. She is the most beautiful sight he has ever seen, wrapped in the dawn, as if the world itself exalts her. She is illumined by heaven's glory. And she says, "Beloved, you'll never be hurt that way again. Not now. Come, get up. We need to get you out of here. You can ride. Trust me." He trusts her. He tries his arms. They move. He tries to sit up. His spine works. He tries to get his legs under him. They hearken and obey. She stands up first and holds out her hand. He takes it, not ashamed now, but glad to have her help.
Their dawn is turning gold and blue and peach and fiery, reflecting from her armor. He looks down once and back again where he lay is now an empty pool of blood, too big to be survivable if it came from just one man. His cuirass is chewed on the left side, ripped open across the middle by a claw or blade whose strength he can't fathom or begin to estimate. The two of them leave bloody tracks as they walk slowly together to the open Mage Guild gates. His coat and her big black snort reprovingly at the smell of blood. He is shaky, but strong enough. She paces him. Somehow his arm is over her armored shoulder. He thinks that he shouldn't get blood in that beautiful hair. She walks him to his horse. First he thought he couldn't swing up there. The saddle seemed so far away. She said, "You can. You're just shocked. You're fine. Get on your horse." He did, because she said so, and he could sit the horse just fine. She untied his reins from the gate and gave them to him. "Heinous place, full of heartbreak and hubris," she said, tossing her head. "We'll not come here henceforth. Your commander was correct, not to want to do battle here again. This is no place to meet such foes as these, on their home ground."
"I'm not supposed to be here now."
"Then you were never here, if you wish it so." But he couldn't ask her that, not to lie, nor would he. He said,
"Will you ride with me to the barracks?"
And she rode beside him, all the way home.
"It's done," said the Theban goddess to Tempus at the barracks outside his office. "What you asked." The goddess wore her black armor. It gleamed in the morning sun. Her helmet was under her arm.
"Done? What's done?"
Nico must be with their horses. He could see hers at the stable door. "He accepted the help you asked for him. I thought that you should know before your next battle." Her voice was grave. Her amber eyes searched his. "Use him wisely. Few have been given such a weapon by the gods or fates before." And she walked away, toward the barracks stable where her horse was tied outside. When Tempus got there, he found no goddess, no big black horse tied there. In the cool stable, Nico was rubbing down his black coat, his back to the stall door, wearing just his tunic of mossy green linen, old and threadbare. The tunic was stiff and torn, dark with stains like mottles all down its side and across its back. His cuirass and gear lay on a bale of straw outside the stall. Tempus fingered the cuirass. The leather and linen of the armor was sundered across the diaphragm, crusted with blood. He could put his fingers through the slash and spread them. The whole left shoulder of the cuirass was badly chewed, sticky with clots. The new short sword was nicked and its blade blackened. Nico had cut his hair. It stuck out and up and every which way, clumped together. Tempest knew Nico had seen him come in. He waited, leaning on the stall's partly open half-door. but his partner didn't say a word, just brushed and rubbed on the black colt. Nico's tack was slung over the half-door, smeared with mud or blood or both. "What happened, Stealth?" Tempus asked at last. Nico untied the colt from the wall and turned to face Tempus. The whole front of his tunic was dark, stiff and torn. "She left," said Nico, coming toward him until only the half-door was between them. "She was coming to see you," she said. "Her horse left, too."
"Before she left."
Tempus licked his fingers and ran them across the saddle, then tasted his fingertips. Blood. He reached out to touch Nico's stiff tunic where the long slash was. "What happened?" Nico retreated a step, away from his hand, then slipped out the half-door and closed it behind him.
"I ended up down at the Mage Guild. I apologize for disobeying orders. Whatever punishment you decide there is for that, I deserve it."
He stood face to face with Tempus, head high, eyes a world away. There was too much dried blood mottling that tunic on his arms, on his legs.
"I should have told him what Ishard said. When I realized he was gone, I should have gone after him. I knew where he was going. Far too much dried blood."
But his partner wasn't shaking or pale or dripping fresh blood or holding his entrails in place. "Come to my quarters now." This was nothing to discuss in public. Men were coming in, changing horses, choosing tack. Nico gathered up his cuirass, his sword belt, the rest of his gear, and paced him. The sun was smiling bright. Birds were singing. He watched his stepson as the two of them walked across the courtyard. Three times men approached them. He waved them off with hand sign. This fighter of his had been through something that not even a tunic meant to minimize bloodstains could hide. Nico's long limbs moved easily. Tempest scrutinized every detail. His partner showed no sign of pain or weakness. Nico paused on the threshold to put down his gear. "Bring it," Tempest said. "Inside, you and all of that." Here it would be easier, whatever they must say to one another. He took the little chair behind his table. Nico stood with his back against the door he closed. "Now, tell me."
"I'm sorry. I thought she'd tell you."
"She told me you accepted the help I asked for you. Now you tell me. Look at you. You're lucky you aren't dead from the state of you and your gear. Again?" Nico leaned his head back against the door and stared at him so hard he thought his heart would break. Resignation, loss, and sadness so deep a man could drown in it.
"Never again," she said. "Commander, forgive me. I can't face that sham thing in my rest place. Or his. I need to do it here."
"I know, Nico. Ishard told us. Yesterday I should have told you, so we will forgive each other today."
"Thank you,"
sighed the fighter, leaning against the door and sagged a bit.
"Thank you."
"Now tell me."
I ended up at the Mage Guild gates, used the key. Something came flying out of the doors. I grappled with it. It won. I couldn't even move. Lying in my own blood, paralyzed. She came along, told me to ask if I wanted help. I didn't want to live like that, or die like that. I should be braver, but I'm not. I asked. She did something to me. I'm not wounded. In any way. Nicodemus came away from the door and reached him in 3 strides. He sat back. The stepson stripped off his tunic with a pull that ripped it from his body. Look, just dried blood. Mine. Not a scratch. He turned slowly, full around, examining his own body as if it belonged to someone else, his face expressionless, but his voice was trembling. My whole stomach was on fire, torn open, I think. Look at the caress. I couldn't move. My head, my arms, my legs. Couldn't talk at first. I was lying in enough blood for 2 men. I don't understand. She...
Tempest was up before he thought about it. Came around the table. Took his stepson in his arms and just held him. Feeling Nico shudder and shiver and shake. Feeling that spiky hair matted with blood against his shoulder. They stood there that way until Nico's breathing eased. Then Tempest let him go. Nico sat on the table and said, "What now?" Looking up at him with naked entreaty for an instant. Then the expressionless countenance returned, the armored eyes narrowed. In only the bloody loin guard his breathing was easy to judge. This one wanted to fight or flee. What do you think, Commander?
I think you're very lucky. I think the next time you disobey my orders, I'm going to treat you much more harshly. I think you're going to promise not to go off alone, for any reason, until we get this matter sorted out with Shamshi and Ascalon. Agreed?
Yes, Commander.
Hazel eyes locked on him like salvation.
But now what?
Now what? Not much has changed. You're still a stepson, still second in command of the Sacred Band. You have duties to attend to that can't be attended to half-naked and covered with blood. Clean yourself up, and we'll go into the city. And thank that goddess every day that you came through this so well.
Thank you, Riddler.
Nico got off the table and headed to the door, fluid and fit and strong. There he paused and looked over his shoulder and said, "Am I..." He shook his head and opened the door, shrugging into his ripped tunic and grabbing up his ruined gear, and paused.
"Are you what?"
Tempest asked softly. He knew what Nico wanted to know. He simply didn't know how to tell him. When it had happened to him, it had taken him ages to accept it. He'd slit his wrists and watched how long it took for them to seal. He'd done that more than once, over time,
testing the gods and himself. With Vashanka, with Enlil, and neither god manifested outside him, but within him. This thing between Harmony and Nico was different. Nico stared at him wordlessly, waiting for wisdom, absolution, or intimations of immortality. Tempest sighed and said, "My right side partner needs to be able to withstand more than the average fighter. Now you can, or so your goddess says." Stealth called Nicodemus had suffered enough, repented enough, and now needed something to hold on to, desperately. So Tempest added as gently as he could, "You're still what you were.
A weapon of the god, perhaps more than you were."
"Your goddess told me that few have been given such a weapon by the gods or fates before. And for that, I'm grateful to her. I need all the weapons I can get." He saw his stepson nod as the fighter slipped out the door without another word and into a different kind of future than Nicodemus had faced before. Or than he had. How will it be for him, this Nicodemus, this simple fighter of few pretensions, so young in body and in mind? Fighting with his goddess beside him, not with the god inside him. Will he still be so just in battle, this balanced force, now that grace relieves his soul? Nico had been Tempest's greatest vulnerability for so long. If things were really as they seemed, if the goddess were truthful, then not only Nico was changed. Everything was different now. They could bring the fight to their enemies. Fight on other days without number. Forever. End of chapter 38. Chapter 39. God to God, man to man. "Love sees all. Hate is blind," says the goddess Harmony to Enlil and Vashanka, where they walk among purple heather and sage, on feral fields below an outcrop of rock. "We will mend this rift among us through harmonious action in war, if hate cannot blind us. Celestial order must be restored."
"Why bother? Only from chaos does order come. The angry fates bring death where they will, when war is king," says Enlil, storm god of the armies, and the tip of his crown rends the clouds above their heads.
"Wheresoever I rule, death comes shambling after. So it has always been, and will be."
"True. Strife brings all things into being on her battlefield, this I know. I have been there many times," says Vashanka, lord of sack and pillage. "I have died before."
"Gods cannot die while love lives. In knowing hearts lies eternity," the goddess of harmony and love and war rejoins.
"Speaking of eternity, Harmony, you saved a lowly avatar of mine twice from death and then resurrected him. Each soul has its appointed doom. How is it you dare to raise a mortal boy so high, high enough to flout the gods? Bring godhead where a man may reach out and take it?
growls Enlil, and lightning splits a clear blue sky.
Yes, how? Why? I have never done so much for any mortal, lest power tempt lowly humans to violence.